Hello, coaches, and welcome back to another great episode of our ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse, our podcast where we connect with some of the best baseball minds in the game today. On behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, let us take an opportunity and sincerely thank each and every one of you for being loyal supporters of this project and listening in each week. But we also appreciate and value your membership and your support of all of our projects. Thank you for being part of our great association. Also, we know you're going to enjoy this episode. It's a great one. We'll get to it here in a second. It is certified audio gold. And again, thank you for listening in each week. If you're interested in previous episodes that we've put out, head over to our website, abca.org. You can click on the resources tab at the top. Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link will be there waiting for you. You can click on that and see all the episodes that we've put out to this point. If you're on social media, we're on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, ABCA1945. You can find us on there. My name is Jeremy Schiedinger, and with this episode of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, we wanted to pay homage to Omaha, Nebraska, and the beauty of the College World Series. We wanted to find a guest that had spent a lot of time in Omaha, had been in the dugouts at Rosenblatt, had seen just the growth of college baseball. We sat down with none other than Skip Bertman, the former head coach at LSU, a coach who had 16 appearances as an assistant and head coach out in Omaha, and we sat down and let him reflect on his experiences being at the College World Series, being in Omaha, the dugouts, the field, the experience of being at Rosenblatt Stadium, but also the current state of college baseball and the beauty of what he sees and how this game has grown. We reflect on some of the great coaches he's coached against, some of those great memories he has, one of winning his 5 national championships. And we know this is going to be one of our most popular episodes, again, reflecting on the beauty of Omaha and the College World Series. Thank you for listening in. Enjoy the episode. And thanks again for what you're doing for the game of baseball. Okay, Coach Bertman, we got you on the call, and as you know, this is our Omaha edition of our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, and we're just going to get right into it. Talk to us about Omaha. We obviously, as college baseball fans, know it's a special place, but we want to hear your perspective. Give us your take on Omaha and how special the tournament is out there.
Well, I think it's the best tournament of all the NCAA tournaments. I've been there as a participant, of course. I went out to see the new stadium. I went back several times for the Hall of Fame. I've been to Omaha well over 22 times. It's a great city. The old Rosenblatt format allowed the baseball teams to be there for 10 days or so, if you're lucky enough to win a couple. And I think it was a great format. We at LSU picked a hotel in advance, and everybody knew that's where to go. And we had quite a fan following. Then, of course, the 2A decided to pick them out of a hat where you would go. But that didn't change the fact that LSU fans came to Omaha. They bought their tickets early. They made a lot of friends in Omaha. I think the greatest thing from a standpoint of the coaches, they entered in things like jambalaya, which had never been in Omaha, Omaha effort for the LSU fans. And then they did the same thing with the gumbo. They even had a bar with the purple and gold, and many places with purple and gold. And no school in the history of the College World Series has brought more fans to Omaha than LSU. Now, other Louisiana schools, Tulane and ULL, were there once, but their fans just weren't as strong. Our fans came early, stayed late, and spent the most. They loved Omaha. Many times, Omaha residents would be brought back by a fan from Omaha to Alex Box Stadium, which is in Baton Rouge, and they'd made such good friends. So Omaha's system now that allows you to win and take a day off for two is a wonderful system. And this tournament format in Omaha is the greatest. Gives you plenty of time, and it gives you plenty of places to go.
If there's anybody out there that knows Omaha, it's going to be you, Coach. Being out there 11 times with LSU, and you obviously went 5 times when you were assistant at Miami. You know, in 1986, you helped, you know, the LSU make their first trip out there. I'm interested to know from your perspective now being the head coach and going out there with a brand new team, how did it feel walking in there in 1986? But also as you continue to go back, how familiar was Rosenblatt to you, the dugout, the people? You know, what was that experience like for you?
Well, I knew personally, you know, quite a few people from Omaha, plenty of people that I were on the committee, NC2A people. I think the LSU gold jerseys at a time when Warren Morris homered is a great recruiting tool. We go back so far. The NCAA wanted, they got more teams, different teams, to Omaha, and of course in view it included the new viewership and new people to come to Omaha. But they're very happy anytime LSU comes because they know they're going to bring a boatload of fans.
I'm interested, Coach, and again, I'm one of those guys you talked about. LSU really introduced myself to college baseball and really sparked my attention as a young kid and obviously a young baseball player, and I probably mocked Warren Morris's home run swing on that, watched it live. But I'm interested in terms of Rosenblatt, because obviously the college baseball fans connected with Rosenblatt. Such a rich history of hosting that, and, you know, the TD Ameritrade's a great park, and we're all excited there's a brand-new facility. But old Rosenblatt had some character to it. Talk to us, are there any kind of you'd have to be in the dugout to know, or in terms of being on the field, little hops, are there any things about Rosenblatt that really stand out to you that you remember?
Well, the original Rosenblatt had characters you mentioned. Was the same for both teams, obviously, and had a lot of fun. What I think has to be passed along to the people was, it was on a hill, and it was high up, and breezes that blow, I don't mean hard winds. I mean, they could blow from left to right or right to left and blow a ball out in Rosenblatt. And, of course, wow. The new Rosenblatt, or the new TD Ameritrade, is built below sea level and faces in a different direction. And to get wind there is very, very tough. The old Rosenblatt, balls were hit over the scoreboard when the wind was right. Some were pop-ups to left field, but could blow out, or in right field, but could blow out. I think the ground crew worked incredibly hard, you know, the same people year after year worked incredibly hard because of the amount of rain came and pulled the tarp out and then put the tarp back and fixed the field and everybody played. Sure. I like the format allows the player to see his friends, girlfriend, his parents or her parents go out to eat to one of the many wonderful restaurants in Omaha, and gives you that time. Plus, it had many practice facilities for you to go to. You know, be a Creighton campus or a high school campus that were fixed up for you. And then they put some batting cages into Omaha, you know, meaning into Rosenblatt. And you were able to use the batting cages at Rosenblatt while you were waiting. And I think the method of baseball, just being the rhythms and the flowing and dynamics of baseball, made it perfect. I think it surprised the baseball committee, you know, led by the NC2A, and I think it was wonderful. And ultimately, the head of the NC2A grew to really like baseball in Omaha, and he was different, you know, after that. Once he learned how baseball played, and the fact that's the NC2A's biggest moneymaker, besides the Final Four, of course, is Omaha. And
absolutely,
because of the television that's done in getting to Omaha by ESPN, and now every game, every single regional and super regional and Omaha game on TV is really great, and it allows a following that's greater than some of the other viewerships. And of course, the people are just wonderful, and it's never going to leave Omaha. I think building a new field was the right way to go. You know, they needed the space, and I think years from now, the new field will have every single restaurant. They almost do already. Every single hotel and every space filled up. I think it's a big deal, and it can last now almost 3 weeks, and it's a wonderful, wonderful tournament.
Brought up a great point, Skip, is the state of college baseball. And while you're talking, and I know you and I have talked about this before, how much the game's grown. And you obviously helped put LSU baseball on the map, and you built almost that powerhouse program. But even then, being as great as you guys were in the state of college baseball, I mean, you were coaching against the Ron Frazier's and the Cliff Gustafson's of the world, and you guys were really battling it out. But then you've seen how it's grown throughout your career, and then obviously getting away from baseball, but still watching it from a distance. You've seen this thing grow out of almost the shadows into, like you mentioned, the NCAA really recognizing that the college baseball is very popular from a fan base and from a player and coach standpoint. Talk to us about that, the progression you've seen college baseball take and obviously the state that it's in today.
Well, the game obviously has grown, and I wish Ron Frazier, God bless his soul, could see it. You know, he'd be so happy. I think the 24,000 that will be in Omaha for each game that's played is really wonderful, but I think it's the tens and hundreds of thousands of people who are following through the regional. And I think they're people have brought names that are common to people because they saw them in the regional, saw them in the super regional, and then they saw them in Omaha. So the people who can't come have a greater TV influence. On the other hand, it has a great following of mom and dad, you know, the other coaches at the school, of course, students that show up, and obviously friends of the program. And that's a wonderful thing to see all of it meshed together, kind of the correct blending of human forces at exactly the right time and precisely the right degree, this Omaha thing. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody wants to see it. But, of course, every player wants to play there. And there have been quite a few teams that have played there besides Miami or Arizona or Arizona State or USC, like it used to be. Now, of course, you see all kinds of people, teams there one time. And they have their year, and I think that's a wonderful thing. The parity for baseball is unbelievable. There isn't a difference between any of the top teams, and they're so close that they can win on any given day.
Makes for a pretty interesting dynamic, doesn't it? I'm interested, Coach, because like we talked about earlier, when you make 16 trips to a place, you played a lot of games there. You know that World Series almost as good as anybody, but as many games as you played and great moments that you've had, I know we mentioned Warren Morris's home run, and that was obviously a great moment, but what are some of those best moments that stand out to you that you really reflect on, that you seem to, you can't shake them out of your memory bank, but what are some of those moments that you can give to our listeners?
One of the things that we did at LSU that I found simply amazing. If we were to win the first two games, which would give you 2 days off, we would have a banquet, I guess, for lack of another term, run by several people, business people from LSU, with a compliance coordinator that would have, 200 or 300 people. They would fill one of the giant steakhouses there. And they that people would pay a certain amount for a certain stake, and it would come out to the penny. I don't know how they did it. And every person that was allowed the meal free got the meal free, and those that did paid, and of course it was all compliance coordinated. And every player got a chance to speak and say how wonderful it was for them to be there. And of course, most every parent was there, and of course, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fans. And while we couldn't get everybody in, that the way the banquet was done and the way it came out to the right penny, put together in 24 hours, was always something that amazed me. So Omaha is so much more than just who wins and who loses and who gets to the finals. I mean, it is a once-in-a-lifetime event for many schools that'll get there just once, or they may get there twice in 5 or 7 or 8 years. And it just has the gravitas, to everybody rooting for the underdog. Mm-hmm. or Omaha people pick a team to root for. And, of course, the service organizations that take care of the teams do a good job. And then, the bus driver that pulls you right up to the gate. And the kids, the 1,000 or so youth baseball teams that are there, coming to the game. There's so many kids. So it's the most wholesome, long-lasting and wonderfully long-lasting event that the NCAA has. In 1991... we were, of course, going to win the national championship, but I was sitting in a seat reserved for coaches to watch, the next game, because it wasn't that they were all on television like now. And for the first time in the history of Omaha, the University of Creighton came. I mean, Omaha had one of its own,
mm-hmm.
with Jim Hendry as coach. Mm-hmm. And they were in a bracket and drew a team they've never beaten, Wichita State, which was also right. very close to Omaha and, of course, a favorite of the fans. And while Wichita State had beaten Creighton during the regular year, this one game in the bottom of the ninth, Creighton was going to oust Wichita State. A ground ball was hit up the middle with the winning run. The bottom of the ninth, turning at third base. And Jim Audley picked up the ball and threw a bullseye one bouncer to the Wichita State catcher, which, of course, played and managed in the big leagues now. He was out at home plate, and the stadium was so large, and people were so excited that Creighton could win. I could feel, honest to God, I could feel the stadium shake. People were just wow. so enamored, with that particular play. And Wichita State went on to win. Jim Hendry went on to professional baseball and is now with the New York Yankees. And the way it was done, and having been there, I wouldn't trade that for anything. That was the most exciting play I think I've ever been around, and it happened right in Omaha in the old Rosenblatt.
What about that first? You're right there, 1991. Let's stay there. And obviously, you bring your team and. You guys end up, dogpiling there right in the middle of Rosenblatt. How did it feel to win your first national championship as a head coach?
I think 91 was we just played 4 games. We set a record. We only made one error At the time, we had the most home runs hit in the four games. We had the MVP in Gary Hemel, the catcher from Baton Rouge, and our team. We had been there four times prior. So the first one came in 86, and you have no chance. See, when you go there the first time, you have no chance. There's no matter how you warn the kids, no matter how you plan it, the baseball gods just don't allow it. Right? And I don't think anybody's ever won being there the first time in the format that they have now. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's ever won. you eat out too much. You know, you have to go to this restaurant, or you have to see your girlfriend, or too many other things take over. In 87, when we went again for the second time, we were going to win. We really were, or so it seemed. And Bull Carey from Stanford hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth with the bases loaded that beat us for the second loss. We went again, you know, in 1989, and Ben McDonald, the best pitcher in the country, number one pick, had a blister on his finger. Unbelievable. And, of course, there were no doctors in the dugout at that time. And that was unbelievable. We probably should have done better. I could have, as a coach, I should have done better. But in 1990, when we went back, the team was cold. It wasn't as great a team as some of the others that we've had. And while we won a couple, lost a couple, we really didn't compete for the championship. But in 1991, we were just too good. We beat everybody except one team by a lot of runs. And we just blew through it. We were just too confident. We knew where to practice, what hotel to go to, where to eat, what time to see your girlfriend, what time to see your parents, what was team time, so we could watch a video in a big room, and so on and so forth. And it was just our time in 91. And Rick Green, a big league relief pitcher, went in for Chad Ogier, mm-hmm. who held down Wichita State, and Tyler Green, another big leaguer. And we win 6-3, and of course, dogpile, and have a wonderful time. And then when we win again, it just never gets old. That part of it never gets old. But the expectations at LSU are so huge that the season just doesn't begin until you get to Omaha. And while we draw a lot of fans and we have a nice stadium, what makes me probably the proudest is other schools draw a lot of fans, and they too have nice stadiums. And I've seen baseball grow from 2 umps to 3 umps and now 4 umps on a regular SEC weekend, and 6 umps in Omaha on the field together, just like the real Major League World Series. And I think where it used to be about how can we save a little bit of money here, it's how can we make some more money to help volleyball, softball, you know, tennis and golf and other sports that don't have this opportunity to put a lot of people into a stadium to watch them play. And I think I think it's great. I think the amount of money plus ESPN plus the fact ticket house, plus everything that goes on, is just a wonderful thing, and I'm sure it'll never leave Omaha.
You brought up a great point in that, and I took the words right out of my mouth. You know, you've won 5 national championships. So do any of them stand out? Obviously, you'd think, you know, maybe your first one would. But I'm interested, Coach, the one you won in 2000 with obviously Brad Cressy coming through with a big hit to win it for you guys. Does that one stick out to you? Because I think, you know, you probably knew that, you know, you were getting probably to the end of your career, and you didn't know how many trips you'd make back to Omaha, and that being your last national championship, does that one stand out to you?
Yes, it does. Stanford had a Mark Marquess, and his Stanford team had a wonderful pitching staff. They, as a matter of fact, they had 2 guys that were going to win $6 million in the year 2000 that were going in the first round. And, of course, our pitcher, who was Brian Tallett, who was still very good and played in the big leagues for quite a long time, but wasn't quite as prominent as those guys. And the thing that I love about it was it had many things to it, the game. It had a Ray Wright jumping into the stands to take a home run away, a 3-run home away, from one of Stanford's great hitters. It had Trey Hodges, my relief pitcher, coming on late in the year after an arm injury to be amazing in that series. And every time we needed him, you know, he was there, and he was the MVP of the series. The Stanford game had also the following. While each team in those days got about 1,200 tickets by the NC2A, we had of the 26,000 people in the old Rosenblatt, we can't know for sure. You know, nobody really knows.
Right.
But I don't think there's any doubt that we had well over 10,000 LSU fans in the stands, getting tickets from their friends in Omaha, getting tickets because they knew we would be there, say. And the rumble and roar of the old Rosenblatt is, you can't get a shout to be heard, you know, if you're in the dugout, because there's so much noise and they're so close on the field. And of course, the fact that a wonderful kid like Brad Cressy, and most of the kids are just blue chip kids in every regard, and have had the advantage of two-parent homes, siblings, and mom and dad supporting their baseball careers since they were 10, the wonderful kids. Brad Cressy had his mother and father, naturally had good seats right behind home plate, and the ESPN cameras captured them as Cressy hit his base hit through the left side. And we had, and of course, this is the bottom of the ninth in a tie ball game. And we have Ryan Terrio, another big leaguer, coming around third base. And the play is going to be real close at home. And you have Mr. and Mrs. Cressy, all right, up in the stands, you know, shouting while it's happening. And then, you know, embracing after, of course, he was safe. And I think that was a great one for me. Okay, I really liked. We had a great team. I mean, we had a lot of people to be big leaguers and a lot of people who would play professional baseball. And yes, that was my second to last year. And that made a tremendous difference. And I really liked that one. And naturally, the one where Warren hit the first pitch, batting ninth, for a home run to win a game. And that's the only time that's ever been done in the College World Series. As a matter of fact, it's the only time it's ever been done in the history of baseball, because when Bill Mazeroski in 1960 hit a homer to beat the New York Yankees in the bottom of the ninth, he was a leadoff guy and there was no outs. So Warren had two outs, and he proved that dreams do come true. And he hit it low and he hit it hard. What people don't understand or remember about that one is that Warren was in his fourth year. He was going to play in the big leagues for several years. He was a good player. But he got injured in the Olympic trials earlier that year. He rested. That was in November of 1995. He rested, even though I asked, is it a hamate, a small bone in the wrist that when cracked doesn't allow you to turn your wrist like you have to as a baseball player? And the doctor misdiagnosed it. We treated Warren with a, let's say, anti-inflammatories and the like. And then he hurt it again on February 29th against Tulane, which is leap year. And from that point on, it was a foot race, because he missed 40 games. And when he played, we were 22-0. Wow. And we had a good record when he didn't play, but he'd come and root us on because he's such a good leader. What I think really is the greatest is the spiritual end of it. Warren started against Austin Peay in the regional at Baton Rouge at 50%. In other words, he couldn't even swing the bat. He walked twice, he bunted and was out, then he struck out. Okay. And then by the end of the tournament, he might have been 55 or 60%. Then we went to Omaha and we won and had 2 days off. Miami won and had 2 days off. Warren got up to 75%. And I still kept him ninth, even though he should hit four hole. Okay. We won the second game, and he had two more days off, but so did Miami. We won the third game and had 2 days off, and so did Miami. All right. And by the time he was ready to play in the national championship game in that early June, he said, "Coach, I feel 100% on the morning of the championship." He got two other hits that day. We left for the Olympics two days later, and he led the Olympic team in not home runs, but in total bases, and hit many homers. From that point on, it was a high draft pick, and of course, played and was coached by Bill Mazeroski. You know, the only two people that have ever hit it in the bottom of the ninth. Just to be there, but to become well, feel confident on the final day, was a wonderful thing. And Warren was a very spiritual kid. And it's just that was a wonderful thing, too.
You bring up Warren and his approach to being a great teammate, and you kind of alluded to it, the spiritual element of our game, and ultimately the game figures out who to reward. You know, when it's all said and done and that moment's there, usually it's going to reward the people that have earned it. And it sounds like Warren was right on pace to do that, being a great teammate, even though he wasn't in the lineup, and it showed in your record. But talk about that in terms of, you've had obviously a lot of teams and a lot of players, in terms of being a great teammate, and it may not always be easy for guys, but how did you deal with players in terms of helping them understand the team dynamic, staying on that course?
Well, several things. One is baseball is a very unforgiving, very difficult, and sometimes very cruel game when it's played every single day. Yes, it does come back to reward those that work the hardest or have the most skill and want it the most, but not necessarily, you see. And that's what makes baseball so great. Is the rhythm, the dynamics of talking to the person next to you between the pitch, going to get something to eat or going to a restroom between the innings, then you're back and there's no real pressure like there is in football or basketball or the other team sports. It's the only sport that they use the term run as opposed to goal, you know, or point. You know, it's no free substitution, as you know, and no time clock. And I think that baseball is very, very different. And what is hard to do, but I thought I managed as well as I could, to show the entire group that the sum total was greater than any one of its parts. And that when we make our goal to go to Omaha, we've always told them there's a lot of talent out there, and that the team with the best players on it isn't likely to win, but the players on the best team is likely to be the winner. And that's certainly been the case for us. So we've had some good fortune, and we've had some unforgiving, tough fortune, which is the nature of the game. But if that has to be done, and if you're going to play the game long enough, you're going to see bloopers going against you and hard hit balls right at somebody for your team, and other things that the baseball gods will and won't allow. We've had both of those happen, you know, in our share of going, you know, to Omaha. But no matter whether it's cruel or matter whether it's like the home run against us in the bottom of the ninth, or whether it's wonderful like the home run by Warren Morris in the bottom of the ninth for us to win, there's no place better to have it show than Omaha, Nebraska, at the College World Series.
We've talked about so many guys, and Coach, I know this is a soft spot for you, and I'm really excited for our listeners to hear you talk about Coach Frazier, but let me set up the table for you, because I don't know if our listeners, our coaches, understand how important Coach Frazier was to the college game, and I'll put it on a platter for you. This is a guy that, obviously, when he got to Miami and revitalized that program, Miami football was actually going to drop their program, but they used his model of showmanship and his model of recruiting and those type of things to bring their football program out of the dust. But he's also the guy that lobbied ESPN to start televising our games. I mean, he's the wizard of college baseball in so many regards. And you got a chance to coach with him. You guys made five straight trips to Omaha, and you won on your last time as an assistant. But talk about Coach Frazier and how influential he was, and really educate our listeners on Ron.
Yeah, he'd be a guy that you'd want to know about. First of all, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being, and a very, very, very excellent baseball coach. Very underrated because he did other things so well. Like one night you go to the ballpark and he's got a $5,000 plate dinner going on the infield with truffles from the Black Forest of Germany, somebody playing the harp on the pitcher's mound, and everybody in a tuxedo in late February which, of course, the weather in Miami allows for that. Right on the field, he had him picked up in cars that were a Jay Leno-type antique automobiles. He had him brought through center field, and it was a wonderful thing, and I was so happy for him. And he'd raised money for his own program. He was way ahead of his time. But what made him different was he cared how many people watched the game. And it would look out and see if there was a line to get in, or if somebody had their fingers in the air where they needed two tickets. He was the father of promotions. On a Saturday in an afternoon game with skydivers, he would have a bikini day. All girls in bikinis could get in free, and all guys with binoculars could also get in free. He had a money scramble. He gave away cars. Oh, he was so far ahead of the other coaches. And with it all, he won, many games. But to his credit, I learned a lot because I didn't know much about that. But yet, he allowed me to coach the baseball team. He went out and did these things. And he said, instead of saying, well, Skip helps a little bit, his answer was, we make a great team. And meaning he wasn't afraid to give me credit. And I can't give him enough credit. He did this long before athletic directors realized that you could make money playing baseball. So now all of these schools, like Louisville, jumps out at me. Dan McDonald patterned his program after mine. Starting with nothing, in Louisville, and now building up the beautiful place and five straight super regionals. I think Ron Frazier deserves a lot of credit for that. He was just too far ahead, and they hadn't even done Title IX yet, and Ron was doing his thing. And he would draw 5,000 people to a baseball game. And around the country, the average was about 300. And he was just terrific at that. And I wished that he would have been able to see today and how so many people come to the games. But when you reach the finals, how every place is packed, how every school has a very nice ballpark. And that's what Ron did. He showed the athletic director that you could make money if you put a nice little ballpark down on the corner. And they were so slow, to pick up on this, the ADs. They thought that could never, it could only happen in Miami, where it's hot. It could never happen anywhere else. But the truth of it is, it was happening all over the United States, including Oregon State and many other places that are not Sun Belt states. And you're so right. Ron Frazier was the granddaddy of all of the baseball. And he was also president of the ABCA and did everything that anybody could do. And as naturally, he's in the Hall of Fame. And naturally, he was liked by thousands of people and coaches. But the truth is, his dynamic of getting people into the ballpark, of selling his program, was kind of like the late Muhammad Ali, who thought it was his job to promote the fight. Well, Ron's job, he thought it was his job to promote the game. And he did such a great job at it and was such a wonderful person.
Well, one more quick Ron Frazier story, and it's one that really stands out. When you really think about how our ballparks are created today and the security around our games. But there's a story, and Coach, you might have been in the dugout for this one. Miami was going to play Florida State, and there's just so many people that wanted to come in and see this game, this rivalry game. And they ended up, and he confirmed it with Florida State's coach, they put ropes down the foul line so people could actually be on the field, and actually was lobbying to start placing people along the warning track, and obviously got vetoed on that one. But that's how, you know, powerful that rivalry was. But that was Coach Frazier. This is important that these people that want to be here and want to experience college baseball, we can get them on the field. It's a little outside our realm, but we can get them on the field. Were you a part of that? Got to see that firsthand?
Yes. Of course, ropes game, my fire marshal. Ron knew the fire marshal, and he allowed him to get on it, see, and get away with it. When we had one like that at LSU in 1987, I got a big kick out of that because I had been part of it before. And yeah, it was a ground rule double if it went into the crowd who was sitting on the field, like in 1907, you know. There were times in baseball where I'd want to leave the tarp in right field because I, you know, flatten it out, not on the tube, but flatten it out because, you know, the baseball teams put the tarp in. You know, the tarp isn't put in by a ground screw like the big leagues. And, you know, the baseball players had to run out and get it. And sometimes both teams. And, you know, it was a pain. So I'd ask them to put their, you know, rolls under the tarp. It's too okay. And everybody always did that. And I can't imagine that today. No. Not yet alone fans on the field. No. That can't happen today. But it doesn't have to because the stadiums are built so well today.
If you had to, Coach, reflecting on your coaching career, and Skip, you wanted to give some advice to a younger coach out there, so just starting off, he's fresh out of college, what would you offer to that young coach?
Well, today baseball has become, you know, a lucrative sport for the athletic director. And that means that the baseball salaries and softball salaries, which are going to go up, and I think that coaching in high school, something you brought up earlier, is very important. I mean, you learn a lot. See, they ask you to do a lot of things in high school, like man the door at a basketball game, see, or take advantage of the study hall, or do something for the school, as opposed to the university where you just do one thing. I think it teaches people how to be well-rounded. So if you're in high school, that's a good place to start. And stay there and learn as much as you can. And then, while I don't think that you necessarily have to go to junior college, I think that's a good route. Or you may go to a smaller school, which is a Division II or III, which is also a good route. Okay, but if you you want to do that, you're going to have to read and stay up on baseball, be good for your university. And I think today, baseball, the job you have in baseball is the best job there is. Just to be able to coach baseball at any level, at any place in the United States, is the greatest. That's awesome. What I would tell them.
Okay, Coach. Well, we really appreciate you being on with us. I think you've given us a tremendous insight into Omaha and the beauty of the College World Series. And obviously your stories and insight are just so tremendous for our listeners. We appreciate you being on with us, Coach. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great. That was fun. Pleasure talking to you. Keep up the good
Absolutely.
Work.
What a tremendous episode, sitting down with the legendary Skip Burtman. We hope you enjoyed listening in and reflecting on Omaha and the College World Series. We had a great time putting it together, and again, we want to thank Coach Burtman for spending time with us and reflecting on all his great experiences out in Omaha. Again, if you're interested in this episode and our previous episodes, head over to our website, abca.org. Click on the Resources tab. Our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link will be there. You can also head over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. It'll show up on your phone each time we put a new one out. Again, we're on social media, Twitter and Facebook, ABCA1945. If you have any feedback for us, please feel free to tweet at us. Send us a Facebook message. You could also send us an email, Sheets, Sheets, at abca.org. We'd love to hear from you. And again, we truly appreciate your support of this project. We appreciate you listening in each and every week. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.